bare so right, and you're feeling it so loud, and it's so right, till we're all drunk, then it's all fast, then it's all over, go home, go sleep, wake up, get sober, what a great night, and it's so loud, and it's so right, till we're all drunk, then it's all fast, then it's all over.
Yeah, supercomputers. I was initially very, very excited to hear that we Straya had its own like supercomputer, and then I read the details.
Is it GLaDOS?
Well, it's not. No, it's not what I'd call super. It's like the 27th fastest, biggest computer 27th. In the world. 27th.
Well, I've got the 16th, and I just bought it from an Apple store.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, New Zealand's probably got like two or three more supercomputers than we got, and they probably just gaffer taped a couple of PS3s together for it. Where is this?
Canberra?
Know this thing
never
is?
Heard of it.
It'd be down in Canberra. But I like the fact that it's an Australian supercomputer, and obviously it's so Australian, it just works just hard enough, but no more. Like, it could do a lot more, but no, mate. No, that's not going to happen.
I suppose the thing with this is that we know that unlike the HAL 2000, it's never going to turn on us.
Surely, HAL. Surely, John, you mean the HAL 9000.
Is that what it was? Oh, of course, yeah, sorry. Look, it's a dumb movie.
You could actually speed up the...
No, it's a dull movie. Let's just get it out there. 2000 space odd thingy. It's dull.
It has pacing, John. It has pacing and pathos and... Yes.
Narrative.
Pacing? There's no pace at all. I suppose it's got pathos.
It takes its time.
Know, monkeys hitting each other and stuff. It certainly takes its fucking time to go nowhere.
Oh, John.
And say nothing.
John. I'm not too sure we can be friends anymore.
But having said that, I suspect that HAL is, a more capable supercomputer than... What's ours? Like Bruce or Wayne or something?
I imagine it's Liquid.
Keith. It'd be Keith, the supercomputer.
But the problem is that usually you liquid cool these things with liquid nitrogen, and this one's just filled with beer, apparently.
If it was a modern supercomputer, it'd have to be called Jaden.
Or Mitchell.
Mitchell?
So no one's done the research, have they? Well, none of us know where this thing is. We just know it's somewhere down in Canberra.
It's part of the National Computational Infrastructure, which just means it's plugged into the internet somewhere. It doesn't matter where a computer is these days, John.
It's probably some shop front selling old 386 boxes out at Woven or Tuggeranong.
About a decade ago, I went with a friend, and my friend was mad keen on Amiga computers, the Commodore Amiga.
Oh, wow, yes.
And this was still 15 years after the Commodore Amiga stopped being in business. And there's a little tiny shop.
I want to talk over the top of you, because I just thought about the Amiga today, but I'm not going to talk all over the top of you. I'm just go on with the Amiga story, and I'm just going to stand here bursting with the urge to talk all over the top of you about the Amiga when I first...
Back in time.
First encountered it. No, okay, sorry. Let Dan speak about the little shop.
John, why don't you tell us what's on your mind?
Yes. I was thinking today that it would be a really great investment strategy if, like, when new kit came out, you just bought, like, a shrink-wrapped box and you never opened it. You just put it in the cupboard. Like, you just imagine if I'd bought myself, like, an Apple Lisa or a Mac Plus or something like that, and it was still in the wrapping and stuck it in the cupboard.
Does that still work?
Does it matter? Does it matter? Like, some idiot somewhere would pay a shitload.
The strategy, yes.
Oh, the strategy.
In comic books, that's what people did. Like, when Spawn was brought out, and everyone went, oh, my God, we must collect Spawn 1, and they just bought them all. Everyone was buying them all. They're worth nothing. It's not like Spider-Man 1 or Superman 1, these Action Comics 1. So I'm not too sure if we can do that anymore, because everyone's onto the game.
The trick is to go for a computer that's not popular.
Like what? What was the next box that Jobs made?
The OS2 Warp or something?
It was black.
Operating system.
Yeah. No, that was the operating system, wasn't it? But that was, I was thinking about the Amiga today, because I was thinking, God, if I just bought myself like a Mac Plus, and it'd be tough because, they were hideously expensive machines, and you'd want to buy it and use it. You'd have that whole 256K of memory just mocking you for not being used.
But you could boost those up. My mate got 16 megabytes of memory in his computer.
Way. That's crazy.
Cost him $1,000.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, I know.
No human being needs that much memory.
I remember the first piece of writing kit I ever bought myself, like a piece of tech I bought specifically. I bought rather than my parents bought me a typewriter and even possibly an Olivetti. When I decided I was going to write, I bought myself a Sharp IntelliWriter. I don't want to say the Sharp IntelliWriter 2000, but I now feel nervous saying that, having made my faux pas with the HAL 2000 before. 2000. I just assume everything.
2000 sounds
everything
very
is the
futuristic
2000.
From 1972.
Well, like the Blues Brothers 2000.
Mm, okay.
But the IntelliWriter was awesome. It had a very clicky keyboard, which is important, but and it had a little screen. It was the first. It was effectively it was sort of an electric typewriter with a tiny brain, and because of the tiny brain, it had a tiny screen. And I'm holding my pinky out in front of me, which you can't see because this is
not
a video podcast. But I'm looking.
You
at my
sound
pinky
more
in.
Delicate because of it.
Yeah, my pinky. If you can imagine it, that's the size of the screen. I think you got 16 characters on the screen, and you had, I think it came with 4K of memory, but you could spend a couple of $100 and ramp that up.
That's crazy.
To 16K.
That's kind of meager
awesome.
Compared to the 57,000 processing cores of the this Australia's supercomputer. They're going to be using it for climate change science and earth science, and apparently it can run Crysis 2 as well.
Can I just point out, right now, as we speak, I'm holding a pen in my hand, and in that pen, it has a stylus on one end so I can write on an iPad, and this was given to me for free, and inside the pen is an 8 GB USB drive just built into it. And that's just a thing that's thrown away now to idiots to get them to buy products. In the space of less than a half a human generation, we've just gone from being excited by 16 kilobytes to casually throwing away 8 GB of storage.
Is this what the podcast is? It's old men being amazed by the future?
And wishing we lived in Star Trek times and things like that. Not amazed enough.
Now, that's it. To get back to the thing we're supposed to be discussing, I'm totally unamazed by this so-called supercomputer. You know, it sounds like it sounds like funding was cut. Like, you know, oh, we're going to build an awesome computer. Oh, great. And then all of a sudden, you know, the funds dry up. Oh, well, you know, we'll put this half-assed Persian bazaar effort together. We'll call it a supercomputer when in fact it's just a couple of Sharp IntelliWriter 2000s glued
together.
What are
you going to do with a computer that's that fast?
Well, what are you going to do? You know, design Crysis 3. What else would
you
use them for?
You need climate. Anything with the weather or climate, that's going to need a lot of data points. So you need something there, like something powerful.
But why do we even bother with that? Because, you know, the world's full of fucking nuff-nuffs who don't believe anything climate scientists say. They really should just start
making it
up. I'll
tell you why, because it's not just climate science. It's simulating nuclear explosions.
Right.
Okay, that's cool.
And designing fighter jets.
Oh, well, okay, I'm stiffening up in my my interest.
Australian
and
designed spider jets?
No. Not on ours. No, we can build little stop with Kamals with ours. But
stop with Kamal? I love it. That's brilliant. That's the best Australian plane ever. Stop with Kamal. Oh.
It flies really low. Oh, why is Baron Richthofen and so unkind?
No, busy. I'm just having a look at that the Tiane 2, which is which means the Milky Way 2 from the from China, which is the very fastest computer in the world. It has achieved 17.59 petaflops per second. I don't even know what that is. I literally don't know what order of magnitude of calculations we're dealing with at this point.
Terra and then peta, I think, is next one up. Is it up above Terra, it's peta. So you have Giga, Terra, Peta. Ooh, we're going to have many angry podcast listeners if I got that wrong. They'll write me rude messages.
So where's the fastest? Is that
China. That's the one I'm just discussing now.
China's got... So they got number one and number two, and all we can come up with is 27.
Yeah.
That's a fucking disgrace.
But wait, is it cheaper just to hire someone else's number five, number six, number three, than it is to make number 26 yourself?
Well, I mean, maybe it is, but do you want the Chinese having access to our SOC with Kamal
but
data.
But surely you can trust the Americans. They don't spy on anyone. I mean, they're all about personal liberties and things.
So what are they? I suppose they've got the next, like, four or five, and it's mostly NSA for cracking email passwords. That's all they use it for.
How many times can you write down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in different combinations?
So we don't even know what, like, you know, so climate science, sock with Kamals, that's it. I suppose that pretty much pushes the envelope of its capacity.
Maybe it's just a red herring. Maybe there's a really amazing computer in Australia hidden somewhere in the red center. The money trail suddenly started turning up, and they went, oh, God, we've got to hide this supercomputer that the world must never know about. So we'll make this crappy one, and everyone will laugh.
They're just filtering money away from the Collins-class submarines.
Yes. Didn't they work quite well in the end?
Yeah. The whole Collins-class thing, it was just a... I mean, they started out with issues because... They were way too broad in the brief they gave the system designers to begin with. They basically said, we want it to be able to do everything, which is, you know, it's admirable, but dumb.
So once they took the wings off it.
And but, I think it was Raytheon or something got involved, they got the US Navy in. And some of their contractors, and said, "Okay, well, just give us a combat system." It was a combat system which was the big problem, and they just said, "Give us something that, you know, doesn't do everything, but, you know, kills everybody who needs killing." And once they dialed it back to that, it worked pretty well, and they still work pretty well. Like in terms of, like, just conventional diesel boats, they're still very powerful. The problem is, of course, there's only half a dozen blokes to crew them, so you can never put them out to sea.
Hey, like, we don't have the fastest computers guiding rocket ships or anything, do we, Greg?
No, we don't have a space program, so why would we?
No, but no one does. Like, aren't all the...
What do you mean they don't have a... What do you mean no one has a space program?
No. What I'm saying is no one has their fast computers in their rocket ships.
Well, we don't need it, really.
Do they? No, they're running their, like, 1979 things.
Yeah, well, I mean, once again, the design time... I mean, the shuttle was 70s technology. I mean, that was our most advanced thing in space, and it was 40 years old. That's why they retired them.
So could you do more awesome stuff if you had, like, a Pentium
do some barrel
on the Mars rover?
Definitely. But every time you send up another rover or another satellite or another a probe going somewhere, then you're definitely using the technology of that time. So instead of being 40 years out of date, you're probably only 5-10 years out of date. They can't change it either. It's very hard to go, oh, hang on, you know, we've been designing this for 5 years. Let's update it now because we're a year out, because everything might not work at that point because nothing is compatible. So you can't just slot in a new device or a new core or anything like that. You have to stay with what you designed it originally to do and milk it. Milk the hell out of it.
Yeah, you don't want to brick your rover.
Damn it, I've jailbroken.
I jailbroke the rover. What did you do, Jenkins?
I was trying to install Android on it.
That's right. NASA guys turn up at the Genius Bar at the Apple Store.
Okay, we need to do a hard reset.
What have you done to this rover?
We're going to need to do a hard reset. Could we spend $5 million to put a paperclip on a rocket and aim it really precisely?
Do you guys have, like, a favourite bit of now useless, redundant tech from your past that you still like? I still have very fond memories of that IntelliWriter, because I wrote my first paying story on it. It was a piece for a student magazine about a really ruinous fucking night's drinking and debauchery that I became involved in, and I got $15 for it. And you know, I think I paid $200 for the IntelliWriter at a really crooked pawnbroker. Like, you used to have to buy the thing costs $200, and then you think you spend about $100 for a sheet of thermal paper that you put through, and it sort of burned the copy on there. But it sounded fantastic. It would go
Oh yeah, that's nice. All the computers I had when I was a kid would sit there and just go Arr. That hated me.
Was a lot nicer than Dot Matrix, which just, you know, sounded like what you imagine a migraine would sound like.
I do have a piece of kit that I quite liked, because these days I do some drawing on my computer. I know that some people have these Wacom computers where there's actually an electronic pen that senses a million levels of sensitivity and you can draw straight onto the screen. And I do that on my iPad, and I've got a Wacom tablet. But back in the day, I had a Tabby tablet, my very first drawing tablet. It was about the size of 6 postage stamps, and its little stylus was attached to the tablet by a cable. And if you put the pen on the tablet, it would go click to turn on, but the cursor would skitz out and fly all around the screen. Oops, would fly all around the screen until you held your finger on the metal tab that earthed the device through your body.
Was that a design feature?
I can't even comprehend why it did this, but you had to hold the metal surface in order to get it to work. It's very strange. Made me feel a little funny too.
I had a Palm Pilot for about a day, which I was quite fond of, but so was my 18-month-old toddler at that point. And she just, it was funny how she destroyed it. She didn't throw it up against the wall or into the bath or anything like that. I think it had a home button, and she just pressed that thing like she was playing Defender on an old tabletop game. She just smashed it about 1,000 times in 10 seconds.
I had one of those Palm Pilots as well. I think I had one of the old black and white ones, like the very original ones.
I think mine was the first colour. I'm pretty sure that's how they sucked me in. It was colourful. And I really liked the idea.
I just kept falling for these stupid devices that didn't work like they were, like you wished they would. So I had like the green and the dark green one, and then I got a colour one. Then I got a Nokia N800, which is a little tiny tablet thing, which was shit.
Did you ever get a Jazz Jam?
No, I've never eaten that. What's that taste like?
It's a shocking bit of gear. I trusted Oren. I don't know why I trusted Oren. Microsoft shill motherfucker. I think I got it because all of the journos at Brisbane Times had these things as well. And I was going to say it was a early smartphone, but in fact it was a late stage early smartphone, just before the iPad, the iPhone came out and destroyed everything. What's that design sort of aesthetic where it's not a flip phone, it's a slider. Yes. You sort of slide the keyboard out. So it had a full keyboard, which appealed to me. Like, I liked the idea of
that.
And I think it had like Windows Mobile 5. Does that sound right?
Oh, I don't care.
It was one of the Windows Mobile operating systems. Oh, my fucking God. It was just wretched. It should have been a great piece of kit. Like, the stuff it promised the world. It didn't even deliver Ipswich. It couldn't even aspire to fucking Ipswich. And I ended up, I think I threw it against the wall at some point, destroyed it.
Wow. You see, I was so caught up in the idea of getting internet information in my pocket. I loved it. Even went so far as to spend like $40 to buy the Opera browser on a little cartridge to stick in my Nintendo DS. And surfing the web on one of them is like pulling teeth. It is horrific. I'm so glad that Apple got their shit together and everyone had to step up.
Yeah, well, that Newton, that was awesome.
Yeah, because now my phone is faster than any supercomputer was back in the early 80s, I'm sure.
I always love the information. You have more processing power in a kettle in most kitchens than the entire Apollo 11 did. So it shows you how much, what you can do with a little. You don't necessarily need a lot. You just need to know what you're actually doing. The ones on the Apollo 11 weren't actually, it wasn't really a computer. It was all hardwired.
It was all pedals.
Pardon?
It was all pedals. They had to pedal to get the thing to launch.
Is that what they used to call solid state?
Oh, is it?
I seem to remember reading a Freddie Forsyth novel. It might have been Devil's Alternative or something like that. He was very impressed with solid state technology.
Oh, that just means that there's no spinning bits inside it, doesn't it? Like an SSD card's at solid state.
Yeah.
We have run out of things to discuss on computers.
This so-called super computer is such a fucking dud that we could find nothing to talk about it. Just dreadful.
Hang your head in shame.
You know what we need if we're running out of energy to discuss things, we need a good feed.
I understand that you lads have had a good feed this week, such a good feed that we are going to invite the people who fed you into the magic circle of Spartacast sponsorship.
Yeah. It's a place called the River Cottage Restaurant up in Noosaville. Greg and I were beckoned to the land of retirees, and we got to eat at this River Cottage Restaurant. And
so Noosaville, not Noosa.
Isn't it the same place?
No, because Noosa is where the self-funded retirees from Sydney and Melbourne end up.
Right.
Noosaville, as I understand it, is for people whose superannuation has been swindled.
Oh, right.
Now, we were in Noosaville. We were definitely in Noosaville.
Okay.
Well, that would explain the manageable prices at the River Cottage Restaurant.
It was actually very, very good. We didn't get a choice of what we were going to eat. There were four of us there, and they just sort of brought out. And me being a filthy vegetarian, they knew that. And they gave me a cannelloni with artichoke hearts, and it was fantastic. I really, really enjoyed it. And that's saying something.
Can I just say, that's not the experience for normal patrons. We were working there, so they gave us the shitty meals that were left over.
They did.
And they were incredible.
And we still were, like, amazed by them. That's right. So I don't know what the other people were eating. Actually, we do know, because at the end of the night, the people at the tables beckoned us over to try their desserts. And Dan, I think especially, got three desserts, didn't you, Dan?
They just lined up all these spoons of, like, you know how you, like, at a shitty restaurant, they just, well, they give you a bucket and they tell you to line up at the
trough,
at the other buckets, and they pile
Slops
in, like,
on.
A liter of vanilla ice cream and the shonkiest pine nuts in the universe.
Cookie dough. I just squeeze some cookie dough over
tube.
There you go.
Yeah,
get on the end of that.
Open your mouth. There you have it.
Well, at a proper restaurant, they don't give you bowls. They give you a bunch of little white spoons with amazing desserts
just,
on them.
And just a mouthful, mouthful of amazing dessert.
Yeah. Now, I had three of them in a row, admittedly.
Well, that was good. Because these self-funded retirees, they could not fit enough in, or their diabetes was playing up or something. And they didn't want to eat all the mousse. So they were just...
They were very satisfied with their meals.
And so they were basically handing Dan spoon after spoon of chocolate mousse. And Dan is a beanpole, so he was just stacking it away for the harsh winter that will be coming.
So what kind of joint was this? It wasn't a grill, no. Was it? Because I've heard tell that there is an awesome meat grilling joint in Noosaville, but this doesn't sound like that, because they
this place was, it was only about 50 seats. It was quite intimate, and it had a little kitchen at the back. It looked like a renovated house, and it'd been turned into this restaurant, like a one big room restaurant. And they were trying new things to have different comedy nights and that sort of stuff and get entertainment in. So they had Dan and I and two other people come in to entertain the punters.
You're kidding me. You guys were the entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. So what did you do?
Well, we stole their mousse.
That's right. But made them smile while we did it. No, we were doing basically acting, theatre and sort of comedy stuff.
Like Dracula's.
Yeah, much better.
How dare you?
Much better. With a level of skill and panache that Dracula's only aspires to.
Have you ever heard of someone called Gourmet Traveller or the AGFG Awards?
The Good Food and Travel Guide Awards. I am familiar with their
work. They got a one star, which I'm assuming is good.
No, it is. It is actually pretty good. It's like chef's hats for good food. You know,
right.
To even get one hat, you've got to be more than a bit special. You've got to be a bit specky.
Oh, there you go. Right.
Hmm. So these people had a solid one hat. That's pretty good.
Okay, so who were they again?
They're the River Cottage Restaurant at Noosaville.
Maybe you'll see us there one night, keeping the audience entertained.
It's a five-course degustation menu from $85.
Oh, that's all right.
But, yeah, you can go along to the River Cottage Restaurant, 301 Weber Road in Noosaville.
Now, you know who doesn't need restaurants anymore.
Who's that?
The poor.
No. Well, actually, they need restaurants more than ever, surely, Dan. We're just not going to give them to them. They can go.
No, they need food.
They can go to hell.
Restaurants are just a fancy way of getting food, and they don't hold with that.
Feel that fancy eating. Well, other people don't hold with fancy eating because they get it from a machine. Star Trek people, they just eat from a machine. They press a button and it goes, And there's your meal.
Is there anything that that machine can't provide?
Gold-pressed latinum. That's the, it can't make something, some sort of fictional stuff called gold-pressed latinum.
Well, I meant food-wise.
Oh, I don't know. Well, if you're trying to eat gold-pressed latinum, then yes.
Does anyone cook in Star Trek? And are they always disappointed because the machine can make it better?
Well, there's this whole thing where... it's, you know, they get the food out of the replicators. Mm. You know, Jean-Luc rolls up, you know, Earl Grey hot, something or other.
I think it's Earl Grey hot, that's it.
Earl Grey hot, that's it, yeah.
Make
and,
it so.
And Janeway is just coffee, black, hot.
Like her men.
Because, yeah. Yes. Because, you know, she's awesome. But there's this whole sort of, well, it's not really a subplot, but there are apparently people who can work the replicator better than other people. So there must be some kind of, it must be like Siri, where, you know, sometimes Siri gets it right, sometimes Siri gets it wrong. And so, you know, the way that you speak to the replicator must determine whether or not.
Maybe it's like phone phreaking.
Whether you got, you know, coffee, black, snot.
Phone freaking, Greg.
Phone freaking.
There's guys who can sort of sing the tones.
And then it can suddenly ring China for free. Like back in the olden days when they still had dial tones. So maybe they can, the timbre of their voice makes the computer go, oh, I like this person, and therefore I will give them a really hot tea instead of that lukewarm crap.
Or maybe it's just people who can sort of list off the recipes, you know, and know all the French words.
Mm.
I would like canard and rice cooked with saffron at a temperature of 87.4 degrees.
I assume that Oren will correct me. But,
fuck that
I
guy.
Think...
What does he know?
Just everything.
All right. Yeah, that'd do it.
I'm pretty sure in Voyager, they can't afford to replicate everything. And so Neelix, who is the second most annoying Star Trek character ever after Wesley Crusher, possibly the third after Wesley and Wesley's mum, Beverly, who let the Borg go because she's an idiot. Neelix cooked by hand.
Yes.
Like you often see him walking around with a mixing bowl.
The replicators take a lot of...
stupid Neelixian
arms. They take a lot of energy, the replicators. So if you're out in the Delta Quadrant, you don't want to be pissing energy away into your food replicators when you've got an alien who'll do it for free. He doesn't take much energy. He's just a carrot.
That's right. He's working his passage off, isn't he? It's like, you know, it's like someone who's eaten for free in a restaurant. This guy's like riding out of the quadrant for free. And so he's working his passage off.
Hey, now it can't replicate living beings, but it can replicate dead ones, like meat.
Yes.
I guess so. Well, so it must be different. There must be like a soul chip or something in the teleporter.
Well, maybe. Is anyone watching Breaking Bad, the new series?
No. I don't even go there because I am going to watch it. I'm going to binge watch it from start to finish.
I won't say what it is. They have a big conversation about Star Trek and replicating. There's a massive like sub bit about that, a big funny bit, which is actually awesome to watch. So we're just treading over old Breaking Bad ground now.
Yeah, no, we are. This debate has gone on forever. And it wasn't even what I wanted to talk about with Star Trek. What I wanted to talk about was the military aspect of Star Trek, because one of the things I really like, and I think I was possibly, you know, one of the few people who liked Star Trek Enterprise's series and was sorry to see it, you know, shit-canned after four series. I would have liked to have seen it gone on a bit. One of the things I liked about that series is the way they headed off into the sort of void. Well, actually, no, not the void, because that was a specific place, wasn't it? Into the sort of, you know, the black beyond of the stars, all naive and hopeful and, you know, come meet us, we're awesome. And they get their asses kicked all the way back to Earth, and the next time they go out with space marines. I think they actually were marines, weren't they?
They actually
called them Mako.
Military Assault Command Operation / Organization, something like that.
Space marines.
Who will shoot you in the face.
So what I'm wondering, whatever happened to them, it's not like the later... Federation, because Enterprise is pre-Federation.
It's pre-Federation. So maybe like now we have the Navy and the Air Force and the Army and Marines, if you're American.
Salvation Army. Kiss Army.
I suppose maybe the Federation, just as a guess, is just all these things all wound together into one organization.
Well, it is, but you never see them. And they could totally use them. You know, they're constantly getting into wars with the Klingons and the fucking Cardassians.
I can't quite remember,
and
though.
The Borg.
In Enterprise, because I only watched like the first series, I think. I didn't go all the way through. I wasn't that impressed. Did they have...
Oh, you're the problem.
I am the problem.
You're the problem. You're the reason they got canned.
They came to me specifically and I was very non-committal, so they just couldn't put the money into it. I'm sorry, guys. It was me. Did they have transporter technology? Could they beam people up and down at that point?
oh, look, they had it, but they were still, it was, you know, it was like the early versions of Android. It was janky and not to be trusted. Okay.
So you had to drop people in a ship. So basically you had to literally drop ship someone
in. Yes.
And that's why you need Marines. Later on, if you've got a transporter, you don't need Marines anymore when you just have your normal dudes turn up with like a laser beam that can shoot through schools and just make everyone sad.
Well, yeah, and there was that episode of original series where some Federation captain had ended up on some primitive planet and he had a phaser which made him like a god. Somewhere in that episode, I think they're talking about the power of a phaser and how you could destroy a whole city block with it.
There you go.
If you wanted to. I sort of understand, like, you put a phaser on someone's hip.
And they're a tank.
And, you know, they can destroy a whole city block. So, you know, maybe you don't need, divisions and so on.
In Deep Space Nine, I'm just trying, because that's one I did watch a lot, they never talked about Mako, because I think Mako was something they created for Enterprise, that though it came earlier in time, came later in actual, you know, TV series. Deep Space Nine had ground forces. They talked about the so-and-so ground forces are going over here. Maybe that was Mako in a different form, but we just, you know, never saw them.
Yeah, maybe it was. But the thing, like, you see the episodes where they're at war. Like, occasionally they'd sort of hive off these alternate timeline episodes where, you know, the Federation was always losing in the alternate timelines. They never got anywhere. They were always just about to be wiped out. And our Federation guys would go in and have a look around and go, oh, this sucks. And, you know, they'd face the moral dilemma. Do we stay? Mm. Do we help? No, they're going to fuck off back to their timeline. But you look at the sort of militarized Federation of those timelines, and basically being militarized Federation means wearing black skivvies and silver pirate belts.
Yep, golden sash.
That's
and
awesome,
boots.
Though.
Yeah,
that's
golden sash.
I would join the military if that was what I was got to wear. Oh, that'd be awesome.
Get some of those agonizer bolts just to keep everyone in line.
It's a good idea. But once again, if you've got a weapon on your hip that can level a block, I mean, what sort of armor can you wear? I mean, you might as well just stand there and get all your organs rearranged.
Yeah, the golden sash surprises them and blinds them so they can't aim properly. Yes,
you're
that's the trick.
Haute couture. Hi, it's haute couture. I'm dazzled.
The sensors on a starship can apparently... The sensors on a starship are almost as sensitive as spy satellites of the 1970s. Like, they can pick out that much detail and then are, like, obliterated from orbit. So, you know, why do you even need the guy with the school block destroying phaser on his hip? I just don't think they thought through.
I always think it's a culture thing as well.
Like the military implications.
I think the culture, you're probably right there, but maybe the Federation is... Can we like to think of the Federation as sort of us, more altruistic in space, doing its thing? But maybe something changed. Maybe after all the nuclear wars and all the genocide and the destruction and Khan and that sort of stuff, maybe they went, no. We're going to train everyone to be the best at everything. You've got to be the master of all trades to join the Federation because we've got billions to pick from. And if you're brilliant at being a tactician and a cook and punching someone in the face and the gentle art of lovemaking or whatever, then you can join the Federation. And the better you become, the higher we'll put you. So in the end, when you want to send your best dudes, you send your captain and your first mate and the science officer, and they go murder everyone or talk their way through it or make sweet, sweet love to everyone in the universe. So they're that we're just thinking it wrong. It's like the Spartans. Like they have to be these brilliant warriors and these brilliant tacticians.
The Enterprise did have security, so they were like the most militaristic part of the research crew, right?
Well, maybe they...
Yeah, but they weren't even very good nightclub bouncers.
But they got to carry guns.
They were the first ones to get shot all the time, weren't they?
Dude, most people on the bridge didn't have a gun, but security did. So maybe it's the whole point. You don't want everyone on the ship to be walking around with a block-destroying weapon.
So you can't replicate them either.
And so you have one man or one woman, one alien, one shim to carry the gun. And if it goes off, you can go, well, we know it was you idiot. Get off the spaceship. So maybe it's just a control thing to keep everyone in place and under guard. There's a gun on board, we're all good, but we're not going to let everyone have them.
Do you reckon shotguns would have seen off the Borg? Because, you know, they've got those energy shields, right? But they're seeing off energy weapons. I'm sort of wondering, I often wonder whether, like, just an old-fashioned kinetic weapon might have done for them.
No, in one of the movies, Picard overrides a safety protocol and gets himself a Tommy gun from inside of the
holodeck.
The Naruto deck. And then blows them all away with bullets with a crazy look on his face that people love to put in animated GIFs. And then it stops working, doesn't
it? Yes. You can kill a Borg once or twice and then it adapts. So it would put up a physical shield the next time to stop you.
The weird thing is that the entire Borg army had been, like, learning how to deal with energy, different types of energy weapons and adding that to their collective. And then that was the very first time someone thought to hit it with a, like, a kinetic bullet. And they were like, oh, what the fuck? A couple of them died, and then like, oh, better sort that out. So now we can never shoot them with guns again.
Thanks, John Luke. Well done on that one.
Well, I think Beverly Crusher has more of a case to answer that whole episode where she could have totally wiped out the entire Borg, and she chose not to. It's just bullshit. It's like that. It's like that Doctor Who episode where Tom Baker's standing there with the two wires. You know, do I put these things together? Like, wipe out the Daleks? Like, you know, I'll save billions of lives. And yet, you know, so much good came out of all of the misery and destruction and death that the Daleks caused. And then I think he tripped over and touched the wires anyway and blew them up.
I don't. You know, he let them live. Go back in time. I think it was more. I don't think it was the saving of the Dalek. That was, he had a problem with that. It was also by changing the timeline so radically, then it would undo a lot of the history as they knew it. So messing, you know, the whole butterfly wing effect stuff going on. Mess with time, who knows what'll happen.
Well, surely Time Lords would have figured that stuff out.
They were pretty useless. They were pretty useless. They hung around in robes with big frill necks, and then one of them buggered off and had some adventures, and then they all got killed by Daleks. And then all the Daleks lived. They were the antithesis of awesome. They were awful. They're just idiots. Let's face it. I'm coming out. I'm saying it. I never thought I'd say this, but the Gallifreyans and the Time Lords are just a pack of idiots. And I'm glad they're dead. Done.
Wow.
They're the Beverly Crushers of that story world.
They were always getting in the Doctor's way by wanting to stop him from manipulating the timelines and fucking up history as we know it.
Well,
God, they just had no sense of adventure.
Well, to begin with, they definitely hunted him down. And then later on, they were like, oh, he's a useful rogue agent. Let's just accidentally lose him again and, you know, throw him when we need him. So I'm hoping in the Christmas one that we'll sort of work out what the Doctor actually did. I think it's where it's heading. I think it's sort of heading towards the Doctor did something to end the Time War, which is naughty, 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 and now he doesn't like to deal with it at all. And I'm hoping we see it. It's not just, you know, putting two wires together in a pond.
So what do you reckon, apart from the fact that, you know, Greg let them down, what do you think Enterprise didn't work out? Was it the title song?
That was awful.
Oh,
that was,
yeah, that
awful.
Was
it the Time War? No, like, what, that was Doctor Who.
No. There was a Time War, and in fact, and that put its head up in the first series too. There was like a Starfleet time ship, and they came and grabbed Archer. I didn't even see the episode. They pulled him forward in time, and then he came back in time. And it was, yeah, you know, it was kind of, you're right, it was kind of a confusing storyline. But then they got that whole sort of, you know, post-911 story arc where that sort of multi-species race did a sort of genocidal attack on Earth, but foolish multi-species race. They only wounded us. They did not kill us. And so, you know, that's when the Makos turned
that out. Show started just about the same, like just before or just after 9/11, didn't it?
Did indeed. In fact, I'm going to look it up.
Don't say that you're going to look it up. Just look it up,
everyone just knows.
To me.
Everyone knows I did not do the research.
I think that show would have been a lot better if they just worked more with the meeting with the Vulcans, getting the Vulcans to like humans. Because I enjoyed that part, the whole, hey, the Vulcans turn up and go, you guys are idiots, we're going to look after you now. So you'll be like a vassal race and we'll train you up and everything will be fine.
Well, they didn't turn out to be worth a pinch of shit, did they?
And then the Klingons, and then they sort of met the Klingons. I would have just liked that of, okay, how did we get to the point that we saw in the original series, like with the Federation created? That's a decent enough story. Don't try and mess it up with time wars and, you know, wormholes and all sorts of mad crap. Just tell a simple story. Well done. That's all.
Oh, and every time Archer would time travel, he'd turn into a different person, and then his hologram friend would turn up.
September 26, 2001,
okay.
It premiered. Oh. So the week after the September 11 attacks.
What was the song?
So,
my head could only get a Firefly.
It's been a long time getting from there to here.
Oh, okay.
And it, yeah. Well, I can't sing anymore, or else the scavenger systems on the internet will figure out that I'm ripping off their music.
That was pretty good, though. You sounded exactly like the
the paddle pop line
the
from Nickelback.
Yeah, you did. But that way, you sort of wonder whether or not they were fucked by their timing, because you got to figure by the time it premiered, they had the entire first series in the can, good to go. So they've shot an entire series. It goes to air 1 week after September 11, and it just changes the entire psychology and mass culture of the US. I mean, there's no doubt whatsoever that September 11 was a sort of epochal event of cultural discontinuity. Mm. Like everything before, everything that comes after, it's different. So that first series, you go back to it, and it's got the original
Hope.
Gene Roddenberry Hope, you know, the hopey, changey, fluffy bunny.
Lots of,
sort
hey,
of
there are
thing.
Strangers out here that don't look like us. Let's welcome them and not be mistrustful
of
them at all.
Once they get to know us, they will love us.
Yeah. Mm.
You compare it to, say, rebooted Galactica, it is a kind of ham-fisted allegory for the attacks. But having said that, I mean, most of Star Trek's pretty ham-fisted. So, you know, you go back and you see some of those counterculture episodes from original series, and they weren't doing really fine gradations of social critique. It was...
They weren't trying to either. I mean, let's face it, they were just going, hippies, space hippies, great, let's write a story. You're probably right, the timing was all wrong for it.
We sort of wondered, because we haven't had a... Have we had a...
Not a series.
Another Star Trek series since we've had some movies.
And I think that's where it's gone. It's gone into movies. J.J. Abrams has gone, okay, I'm taking it. I'm going somewhere new. I'm erasing it all. We're starting again. Love it or hate it. You know, it's there.
And he's talked about doing another series, hasn't he?
Abrams, has he?
I mean, he's wrapped up with Star Wars and everything, but there have been... It's not even on the fan sites. It's on geek culture sites. I think I've seen it on IO9 or something like that. There's no one working on scripts or anything, but there has been talk about, well, you know, the movies have worked out really well. Maybe we could go back and do some of the TV show. And the question was whether or not you would be able to get any of the actors from the movies to commit themselves to a TV series.
Just do a different story. I mean, let's face it, that's what makes it interesting. Have another craft and going in the opposite direction to the Enterprise and have some fun with that. New characters doing new things. Surely there must be writers and an audience for something like that.
They get a different mission. They're boldly going just to fuck up people's shit.
I like that. They're always like 2 weeks ahead of the Enterprise, just landing, going, everyone be fucking cool, and then leaving again. And then they turn up and go, hi guys, oh, we love you. Yes, we thought you would. Yeah, and that's where they take it's the propaganda squad.
Or just some jerk who's just like, okay, you see a guy in a red shirt, you fucking do him over, all right?
Here's 20 bars of gold pressed latinum. You kill him. You kill him dead.
So what do you reckon a new Star Trek would look like?
Lots of lens flares.
Like, seriously, do you think it would be a... do you think it would be... Like, it wouldn't have to be an Enterprise series, obviously, but, you know, I know, once again, Oren did not like Star Trek Voyager, but that didn't make it a bad series.
Like, they had the Year of Hell, which I thought was really great, and then they decided to erase it out of continuity with time loops, and that made me really angry when you go, no, have the balls to just... kill someone or give them an eye patch or whatever you want to do, change them and live with the change. It's a TV series. It's okay.
Well, I think that as I understand it, is Oren's problem with Voyager. They get the shit shot out of them 1 week and you come back the next week and it's like they've been to the Genius Bar at Apple. Oh, you just have a new Galaxy Class Starship. Sorry for inconveniencing you with that photon torpedo incident last week.
We've replicated a whole new ship.
I just discovered something amazing about the song from that Enterprise series.
Yeah.
It was originally the theme song to the movie Patch Adams.
Oh, wow. What?
Sung by Rod Stewart. entitled Faith of the Heart.
Goodness me.
There you go. Now we know why it failed. It had nothing to do with Al-Qaeda at all. It's Rod Stewart's fault.
I'm just going to have to point out something there, John. It's been bugging me since you said it. I just realised the Voyager wasn't a Galaxy class. She was an Intrepid class. Galaxy was the Enterprise was D. And hang on. Enterprise D? Not the E. That was the Sovereign, I think. The E was the Sovereign. But anyway, yeah, she was an Intrepid class.
Well, it's lucky you picked that up. Although
Oren will come.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, it was a minute. You were a full minute in picking it up. In which time, Oren has probably written 700 or 800 words. Just hit pause, kiddies. Just go have a look in the commentary. See what's there. It is. Yeah, there you go.
I was outraged at your comment about Galaxy classes.
Well, I don't know. Like, it's, you know, the thing is, everything that comes on top of what's happened before. So it wouldn't just be a matter of, it wouldn't just be following the Abrams movies. It would be following the example of Galactica, which I think actually it had a lot of Star Trek alumni working on that series. But also it would follow the example of all the long form TV storytelling that we've seen on the private networks like HBO the last couple of years. They wouldn't necessarily have to limit themselves to like one self-contained 50-minute story each week.
There'd be some sort of, and that could be very, very good, or of course woeful if they pick a weird storyline to run with, you know, some sort of, it's difficult. It's a, like, if you're going to make it Star Trek, about trekking through the stars, you know, was it Wagon Train to the Stars kind of stuff, and still make it relevant for a series after series after series? I'm not sure how you do it.
Well, so the way that a lot of those long-form story-based series do it is actually the stories, in some sense, become less relevant than the exploration of character. Okay, I haven't watched it, but my understanding is that Orange is the New Black has just broken a shitload of conventions about TV storytelling, and it's a lot less about narrative than it is about the exploration of circumstance and character. So there's no reason why you couldn't take a Federation starship, doesn't have to be Enterprise, doesn't have to be at the start, it could be, you know, 10 years after Vulcan gets destroyed, it could be 10 minutes after Vulcan gets destroyed. But what you could do is take everything that we've learned about storytelling from Galactica, from Breaking Bad, from Walking Dead, and you put it into a Star Trek context.
You definitely could. But now, I only have one problem with that is it's sometimes with these stories, and a lot of these stories have become this way, science fiction stories, and we said this in an earlier podcast, they're not really science fiction, they're just a relationship show with a science fiction veneer. So we have to try and make it sure that you don't just have a love story set in the science fiction universe or whatever you're going to do. Two houses, both alike in dignity, fighting in a Star Trek universe. It should still...
Or at least if you do that, you should take a lesson from Game of Thrones and have tits all over the place.
Lots of boobs. It's true.
Oh, no, you totally need plenty of that. But if you think about the history of the Federation...
And beefcake for the ladies... I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah. Look, but, Picard is always getting a shirt off. Like, that's good enough, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm just putting it out there. There are different tastes, and we want to cater to them all.
Oh, yeah. In a show filled with different types of alien species, you can cater to all sorts of perversions. Apparently, the Borg can't hold their liquor. They can deal with bullets after a couple of shots. They can adjust their shields for any other sort of thing, but you give them a glass of champagne and they're all over the shop.
Do you want a drink?
I do. To the replicator.
To the replicator. I've got the gold press latinum.
Then it's your shout.
Fuck! It's your round, dude. It's your round. You're hanging at the back of the bar. So just bounce like you're banging in the back of your car. We turn it out. Here we'll talk. We've been down since back in the day. I'm the clown prince. It's your round. If you're hanging at the back of the bar. So just bounce like you're banging in the back of your car.
Hey, you have been listening to Spartacast episode 12, worst supercomputer ever, featuring Dan Beeston, Gregoire, and me, JB. If too much, Greg and Dan is barely enough. You can catch them over at smartenough.org, where they podcast about science, ignorance, and comedy. Me, I'm pretty much hanging around here all the time.
my ring and I'ma keep at him. Crossing my fingers that Eve says keep at him. I'm going down on Louise and I'ma wreak havoc. Little man with a big pen, I've got dirty habits like a nun in the